Good evening, lovelies. Welcome to another episode of Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. My creative tonight is award-winning author Tim Tran. His book, American Dreamer, documents his flight from war-torn Vietnam in 1975 after the fall of Saigon when the communist regime took over. It talks about how he and his family survived on this tiny boat for days, and the struggles he went through only to become a successful businessman. He's got the biggest heart, he continues to give, and he's got more energy than a lot of young people I know. He truly is an American dreamer. So grab your cup of coffee, cuddle up with your host Pup, and enjoy the show. Hello.
How are you?
How are you doing this fine Saturday?
Oh, I'm waiting for this important event.
Oh, wow. Thank
and
you.
I'm ready.
All right.
Well, we can always make things better. I'm personally retired. I'm 70 and a half years old. So I spend, we can't do anything. I used to travel a lot. And
right.
Travel. So I took the time to finish up my memoir.
That's and the American Dreamer.
Yes.
It's a wonderful book. I was reading it and I'm just amazed at what you went through and how you prevailed.
Yes. Well, my philosophy is if you face a difficulty, you have two choices. Let it kill you or you conquer it and move
exactly.
on.
Exactly. Exactly. And you conquered it, and you conquered it with gusto.
Yes, I was very lucky. You know, in the book I wrote about the American dream, the land of opportunity, and I have one more thing. I had an opportunity to be successful, and I had an opportunity to give back.
That's the best part, right?
Yes, certainly. You know, I don't know if you read that part. We go to a lot of funerals. And my wife, Kathy, and I have done so more often lately. But one thing I know for sure is I did never see a fleet of U-Haul truck or U-Haul following full of stuff, following the hearse to the cemetery.
Oh, my.
So the bottom line is you can't take it with you.
Hey, exactly. Exactly. It all stays here.
Right. So I discussed with my wife, we got to do something when we are still kicking.
So right.
We decided to use a big part of our estate to create a trust for Pacific University Library.
That's amazing.
And they, in turn, named the library after us.
What a legacy to leave behind, you know? And you're right. You can't take it with you. And if you do something with it now while you're still here, you have control over what is done with it. Once you're gone, then other people are making the decisions, and perhaps they might not be the decisions that you would have wanted.
Exactly right. And what I wrote in the book is I like to leave a legacy. I'm glad to use that word with two parts. The part one is the Tim and Kathy Tran Library. And part two is the book American Dreamer.
Which is an amazing book.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I am enjoying it very much. It's available on Amazon?
Yes, it's available on Amazon. If you go to Amazon, the search word is forward. Tim Tran, American Dreamer.
Okay. And can they also get it off your website or just Amazon?
Oh, absolutely. www.teamtrendamericandreamer.com. That's my author's website.
Good.
It has a lot of information on there too.
And I think a lot of people should read this book, not necessarily that we're in the same situation as you, but in the fact that no matter how low you get, you can always rise up, you know?
Absolutely right.
I mean,
I have the privilege to talk with a lot of people, and you just hit it right on the nail on the head.
Yeah. It says that you were born in Vietnam, yes?
That's right. Yeah, North Vietnam.
And then you came to the U.S. in 1970 for college, and then went back to Vietnam.
Yes, according to the term of the scholarship that I received, it's 1 degree, mm-hmm. and I must return to my original country.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't do the United States any good to provide scholarship if a student come here,
mm-hmm.
study, and stay.
Right, because they want you to take your education and your skills back home and to put them into play to help your country.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And the other part of that is, since those people who was lucky enough to receive the education in the United States most likely will be future leaders of mm-hmm. their native country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the superpower at the time was the Soviet Union and the United States provide scholarship to their ally. And they follow this very same policy.
Right. And you said in your book that a couple of days before you came back to went back to Vietnam, you sat at a table with others that had gotten the scholarship and were going home as well. And that you looked at one girl and you thought, for sure, she's going to be a Ministry of Finance, or this man is going to be a high executive at this. And when you got back to Vietnam, did you meet a lot of people that had gotten the scholarship and come back and become executives and higher up peoples in the companies because of it?
Absolutely. There were three people that I know personally.
Mm-hmm.
One was the chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank of Vietnam, who got the same scholarship as I had. He went to the United States about 20 years before I did.
Mm-hmm.
Same scholarship. The second person I knew was my uncle. He was a minister of health.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a degree, a medical degree in Vietnam, and then came to the U.S. for the Master of Public Health. And then one more person that I was interviewing with, he was the head of Director General of the Investment and Development Section. It's kind of like a sub-cabinet level in the South Vietnamese cabinet government. And he also went to the U.S., got a degree, and later on rise up to be a sub-cabinet officer.
Wow. So the program works.
For me, a lot of people say, what are you going to do? And my answer, that was before the fall of Saigon.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them that I like to work for Shell, make some money, because Shell pay a very high, probably the highest salary in mm-hmm. all South Vietnam. So I don't have to looking for money when I was in the government.
Right,
yeah.
Right. You had a stable position. And it sounds pretty posh. You had those fancy lunches and executive dining room.
Yes. Well, you know, the international company has a lot of perks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So people of all different countries would work there at Shell.
Oh, well, the top level
mm-hmm.
are occupied by expatriate appointed by Shell London.
Mm-hmm.
And then the middle level ranking, say executive, are mostly Vietnamese, and then the lower level, of course, are Vietnamese.
Right.
So the most that I could do at Shell was being a manager,
mm-hmm.
kind of middle-ranking executive.
And that was considered successful as well, though. Oh, yes.
Very successful. The pay is good. It has a level of prestige.
Mm-hmm.
And after all, it doesn't take a lot to be happy in South Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
my own country.
Right. But after the fall of Saigon, that all changed.
That's right. Oh, well, it's I was taught that to get yourself a good education
mm-hmm.
and nobody can take it away from you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that wasn't true.
Mm-hmm.
When the communists took over, my education, a degree from the USA, was a big liability.
Mm-hmm.
They look at it as somehow I got trained as a CIA agent, and they watched me very carefully.
Right.
it was a big liability instead of an asset.
Right, exactly, because you would think that a college degree would have its own sort of prestige, or it would be looked upon. You're impressed. It's an impressive accomplishment. In the book, you talked about burning all of your things, and it's heartbreaking, because all of that work that you put into it, and just to light it all on fire, because you're right, because those papers could incriminate you.
It's a big incrimination. And also the fact that once the communists get a hold of these, and they have no choice but, you know, prosecute me because of my connection. So I had no choice but burn it.
Right. Even though you had done nothing wrong, it would give the appearance that you had ties to America, and therefore you must be a spy of some sort.
Yes, because at the time, the communists was overdrawn with victory, and they thought they are undefeatable, and they call America their number one enemy. So anybody who has connection with America, even though getting a degree or attend the United States University, they still have that suspicion.
That makes you the enemy as well.
Yes, yes.
Oh, that's horrible. So tell me, I have not got to the point in the book, so I want you to tell me how shortly after you were still working for Shell, but you had taken a phenomenal pay cut. You were down to 45 dong. Was it a week?
45 piastre. Not dollar. Piastre. Okay, that's okay. It's about $4 a month.
$4 a month?
Yeah,
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, so you know, you can feel how I went from up here and fall down to the bottom.
To abject poverty.
Yes, exactly right.
My goodness. So you're doing that, and you're buying the gasoline. No spoiler alerts for people who haven't read it yet, but you're doing something with the gasoline to make a little extra money.
I sold it in the black market.
How soon after that did you decide that you were gonna try to get back to the U.S.?
Well, immediately.
Right.
Yeah, because I was under constant threat that I would be arrested.
Because of the man that came in your office that day that didn't know how to read English.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. The title of it is the book published by the American Institute of Internal Auditing. And I wrote them a letter when I came back to the U.S., but never got a response. I told them that they need to change the initial.
Well, we're going to start a petition because they need to fix
because,
it.
You know, everybody's title with the title CIA,
right,
obviously was looked at as a big suspect, you know,
right,
in the communist world.
Exactly.
So the man probably had a kind of like a fourth rate education with some kind of walk by, kind of look at security, walk into my office, look at the bookshelf, and he looked at that and he reported to the head of internal security,
right,
who started asking me to come down and explain it. And I did. And I kind of worried. That's even worse than my worry before. This adds a new dimension.
Right.
That's suspicion.
Right. And I feel like people that don't speak another language, however, there are words that they might see and think and associate it with a word in their own language.
Exactly.
You know what
exactly.
I mean? And this person may have only known to recognize those three letters.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Wow.
In their indoctrination, they always look at the CIA as Central Intelligence Agency. There's no other word.
Right. I mean, it could be Corn Institute of America, you know. That's silly. But so that was like, you already had your wake up call, but this was your wake up and get out of bed and get out of town call.
Yes, didn't I?
Yeah.
I wrote in the book that quote, and upon the use of language, I need to get the hell out of here. That's what I told myself.
Yeah. So you took your wife, how did your whole family get out, or was it just you? Or
Well, at the beginning, it was just my wife and I, and we faced deceit and all kind of trick to take our money
mm-hmm.
or our gold.
Mm-hmm.
On the fourth attempt, I took my father with me and my wife, the three of us, and it was a serious blunder. He was killed, mm-hmm. and we was almost drowned in the Saigon River. Then I went to some kind of a depression
mm-hmm.
because of my mistake. My father got killed, and I was low on morale. I was low on confidence. I was low on will or drive.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't do anything for a while. And finally, it's thanks to my mom, who had some connection with the Chinese merchant.
Mm-hmm.
And she arranged for my wife and I and three brother and sister to go on a Chinese run. Government sanction, common government sanction, boat to escape Vietnam and go to Malaysia. And on that trip, we was almost killed because, you know, like in the very first page of the book, I wrote that this is not how my life is supposed to end.
Mm-hmm.
The boat was attacked by the Thai pirate, and one engine was seven different groups, seven different times. They robbed the passenger of everything.
Oh,
they even took my glasses, my nearsighted glasses, and my pair of Levi's I was wearing. And
so you're sitting there with no glasses and your underwear on this Chinese ship to Malaysia.
That's right.
That has been boarded by pirates seven times.
Seven different times, seven different groups.
Oh, my Lord.
And what the boat had a two engine. One was destroyed, didn't work. And there was just one little engine, one out of two, just go very slowly because we want to conserve fuel. And then when we are all ready and surrender our life to the ghost ship,
mm-hmm.
then I heard a voice saying, "I see mountain, mm-hmm. I see land." And then everybody kind of wake up.
Yeah.
And finally, we see, you know, our life will be saved.
Oh, wow.
The land we see ahead of us.
And that was Malaysia?
Now, yeah, we saw Malaysia. We saw the mountain and the land of Malaysia. But we didn't go there right away because in the previous few months, I would been listening to BBC radio. And I learned that the Malaysian government didn't want refugee to come to their shore. Because many, many years before that, there was a communist insurgent in Malaysia. That's called a Malaysian communist insurgent.
Mm-hmm.
So the boat has a lot of Chinese, and Chinese is an ethnic group, a pretty big group in Malaysia. And they afraid that this boat will bring to their soil communization to penetrate into their society. So they was very reluctant to allow the refugee boat to get to their shore.
Hmm.
So
they kind of didn't want any more trouble, huh?
Exactly. Because at the time, now we got to go back to 1975.
Mm-hmm.
American had a domino theory that if Vietnam fall, the rest of Southeast Asia is going to fall. And the Malaysian government took that seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did was we wait until darkness, then we slammed the boat into the rock at shore, and we destroyed the boat. So the Malaysian Navy couldn't pull us out to the open ocean. And that decision kind of saved our life in a way.
Right. They couldn't force you to turn back around if your boat's not.
Oh,
yeah.
The boat is kind of sank at they rest on the sand.
Yeah. Oh my
full
goodness.
Full of seawater.
Oh my goodness. You're like, oh, our boat broke. I guess we have to stay.
Right. Exactly. Uh-huh. Right. And then thankfully the next day, once we in the makeshift prison on the shore, the United Nations High Commission for Refugees came to our rescue.
So they kept you as prisoners.
Exactly. I don't blame them.
Oh yeah.
If I were them, I gotta do the same thing. What they did was, once we were on the shore in the middle of the night,
mm-hmm.
the Malaysian police came and they lit four fire camp at Four Corners, and they put barbed wire around us and stay there and guard us until the morning. Nobody can get out. So we were content. We're happy. Mm-hmm. We survived.
Right.
Yeah. So we're just content. We stay inside the makeshift prison.
Right.
And we're okay until in the morning, the United Nations Commission for High Commission for Refugee arrived and start interviewing us.
Mm-hmm. So at least you were out of the elements while they had you incarcerated.
Yeah.
That's
nothing. Doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
We survived. Mm-hmm. We're still alive.
Exactly. How long did it take on the boat trip? How long did it take?
Well, supposedly, the way that we kind of map it out is it takes 3 days for max. But we was detained by seven different group of Thai sea pirates. And it took an addition 3 days because we couldn't go anywhere. They tied a boat, our boat to their boat, went until daylight, and they board the boat and then robbed us. So it's 7 days altogether. Wow. We left on March the 12th and we arrived on March the 20th.
Wow. And they took everything from you. They took food, they took your water, they took your pants. They took everything.
They don't need food. They can have plenty of food. The Thai pilot, all they care about is gold, foreign currency, like dollars, or at the time French, or any foreign currency that they can use. Mm-hmm. Anything they can sell in the black market, like prescription glass that I wear, and some other people wear the prescription glasses.
Mm-hmm.
And Levi jeans. If they look at it, see the Levi jeans, they love it.
Wow. Well, at least they left you with food and water, at least.
Yeah. Well, in an effort to find hidden treasure, they wrecked the food storage.
Oh, no.
Okay. Now, also with the rice, they empty the rice bag.
Mm-hmm.
So they just threw it on the floor. Empty it on the floor. So we kind of run out. We kind of have little rice to cook with.
Mm.
Then come, they also empty the jug of water. That's how it was destroyed.
Oh, wow. But you made it to Malaysia.
I made it to Malaysia. We all made it to Malaysia, except for an old lady who died. Because the condition, she was weak. I think she was in her 70s.
Yeah.
No food, no water for a time, and except for another young lady, a very young lady. And she was sexually assaulted and she committed suicide.
Oh, my.
So wow. Those are the two.
So you, your mother, and your siblings, and your wife are now in Malaysia, and the commission comes, and they interview you for the refugees, and they interview you, and what are your next steps? Where do you go from here?
Well, may I correct something?
Yes, absolutely.
My mother didn't go with me.
Oh, I'm sorry. She arranged for it, but she did not. She did not come along. I'm sorry.
Why she didn't go? Because if we leave, our house will be confiscated by the local communists. She stayed at her house just in case we were arrested or the trip failed and our house was taken over by the local communists. Then we have a place to stay. So we didn't become homeless.
Okay.
As a lot of people become homeless in Ho Chi Minh City because they went and the trip failed and they can't return to their own home because it was taken over by the communists. Anyway, so to answer your question, the United Nations High Commission for Refugee Representative came and the gentleman asked, who speaks English? Three of us raised our hand. And one was the interpreter for the U.S. government. One was the English teacher in Saigon. And when it was my turn, I was asked, what's your credential? And I smiled and said, Kim Tran, University of California, Berkeley, class of 1974. And he smiled and waved me to come ahead. And so he started asking questions, where the boat came from, how many people, any accident, any incident happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then next day, we were trucked from the beach to Kuala Terengganu to board one of the their boat to go to the refugee camp called Pulau Biron.
Wow. And this is what year now?
This is 1979 in May of 1979.
So
I stuck in communist Vietnam for 5 years.
That's what I was gonna ask.
Yeah.
5 years of communist
Vietnam. 5 years under communism.
Oof. Goodness gracious. It's a wonder that anyone survived, you know,
I think there's probably 500,000 people perished at sea.
Wow.
The people who tried to escape perished at sea because of weather,
mm-hmm.
because of lack of food and water,
mm-hmm.
because of sea pirate attack,
mm-hmm.
because of mechanical problem, and many, many unfortunate events that may happen.
Right. It seems like the dangers of the escape are almost equal to the dangers of what you're escaping.
I mean, exactly right. Yes, definitely. You're right.
That's so sad. And but you know,
one thing I wrote in the book, that do I accept living under communism,
mm-hmm.
or I need freedom? And Patrick Henry, I study in American history, say, give me freedom or give me that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it's sad that it might come to that, but that's exactly right. Give me freedom or give me death, or give me liberty or give me death. But props, congratulations, love to mom for to let her whole family go and to stay behind. I know she did it for the right reasons, to make sure you weren't homeless if you came back, but she had to just have a broken heart to see her whole family go, you know.
There's a happy ending.
Oh, good.
After I became a naturalized American citizen,
mm-hmm.
I sponsored her and my older sister. By the way, when we left, we decided that my older sister got to stay and take care of mom.
Mm-hmm.
So she's not alone. So once I became a U.S. citizen, I sponsored both of them come to the United States, and they came. So we are here.
Oh, that's amazing. How long after you got to the U.S. were you able to get mom and sis?
Well, in accordance with U.S. law, mm-hmm. I have to be a resident in good standing in the U.S. for 5 years. Then I can apply to become a U.S. citizen.
Mm-hmm.
I did it a year after, and then I applied with the Immigration Service at the time, INS at the time, to sponsor my mother to come to the U.S., and 3 years later, she came.
Oh, that is a happy ending.
It is very happy ending.
Now, I read in the book, was it your sister? I think it was your dad was taking your older sister, your 18-year-old sister, to a boat, but he had to take one at a time because he had his motorcycle. He told her, stay there, and he came home to get the next child. But when he went back, the boat was gone.
Exactly.
Have you found her? Did you find her ever?
Yes. Well, and this time I got to say some very nice thing about the U.S. Postal Service.
Mm-hmm.
When I returned to Saigon and in the last days of South Vietnam, I told all of my family that if you escape, the only point to so that we can contact each other is Paul Hepp,
mm-hmm.
University. My sister came to the U.S. via Subic Bay, the Philippines, mm-hmm. then Guam, and then Wake Island. From Wake Island, she wrote a very short letter, and the United States Red Cross help mail a letter for her. And on the address, she wrote Paul Hepp, Pacific University, Oregon. That's all she remembered.
Mm-hmm.
And the miracle was the United States Postal Service delivered that letter, no city, no zip code, to Paul Hepp right at Pacific University. And he, with my co-worker at Pacific, sponsored my sister to come to the U.S. and that's how she got help from my very good friend at Pacific University.
That is a miracle, and wonderful that she remembered the name and the university. Because in the book, you kind of try to drill that into them to make them remember. Yeah. And you said it was the simplest name for them to remember.
I have another very good friend, and his last name is Raymond Spurger.
Yeah.
And they live in a very high-end section of the Bay Area called Hillsboro, California. And it's just too much for my family to remember. That's
Right.
why we use Paul Heck, Pacific University, Oregon.
And it got there.
That's a miracle. You know, a lot of people, I gotta say this, a lot of people is so quick to criticize, you know, that they will delay and loss and so forth. To me, that's normal. I find a miracle to praise and to give my gratitude.
Right. Always accentuate the blessings, you know, focus on those,
Exactly.
not the negatives.
Exactly. That's
So,
how I live the rest of my life.
So did you end up back in California, or where did you end up finally?
I end up in Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
And the first thing I did was applying for jobs. I sent out a resume to the potential employer via the what an ad in the Oregonian, the local paper. I used my true name, Kim Tran. And the first time I sent out six letters, six applications, and then I received their response. They all turned me down. And there's something in common. They addressed me as Miss Tran, Mrs. Tran, or Miss Tran. Sorry, we don't have an appropriate position for you. So I came to a conclusion that they thought I'm a female candidate. That's why they turned me down. And I soon come to a realization that what I face is a sex discrimination based on gender. And that happened to a lot of female candidates in America. So I changed my name. I went from Kim Tran to Timothy Tran and sent out the same resume to the six potential employer and three more. And for the six employer who turned me down, now they wrote me and invite me to come for an interview.
Wow. I mean, that is definitely an inequality. I mean, because
Exactly.
I'm sure in your resume you had your degree, you had your work history, and the fact that they thought you were a woman should have had no impact on it, but it
True.
did.
It did. And I changed and it worked.
Yeah.
And then one of the not those original sick employer called me and invited me to come for an interview. And I did. And I got a job offer right at the end of the interview.
Wow.
And that
Okay.
was Johnstone Supply. I started working on March 17, 1980. I start as a staff account because all of my, in 5 years, all of my experience in communist Vietnam mean nothing to the American company here. So I start as a staff account and I work hard. My motto at the time was get early to bed, early to rise, work like hell, and advertise.
I like that motto.
I was early recognized by the president of Johnstone, and he was a very tough boss. Later on, he mentored me and gave me promotion after promotion. He tested me a lot, and I guess I met or exceeded his expectation. So 5 years later, he made me an officer of the company. That's when 1985, and a VP of finance. So I saw the finance department, the data processing department at the time. Nowadays it's called IT, but at the time it's called data processing and investment banking and so on and so forth. So I was the number three in the company.
Wow. And
And I said, yeah.
this
And I
was
said,
in 1985, you said?
1985,
So
5 years after I came.
I was going to say, so about 5 years after you fled,
Yes.
in 5 years you amassed that amount of success and you moved yourself up.
I was very lucky though. I I can't say that it's all due to ability. I think there gotta be a combination.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta work hard, you gotta have capability, you gotta have ability, but without luck, you may not go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
In my case, my luck was I was recognized by the president, and also he took a liking of me and gave me the opportunity. So that luck played a big part of it.
Wow. You're right, though. You can have all the talent in the world, but you do need a little bit of luck.
Yeah, sometimes a lot.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes a lot. That's true.
Sometimes a lot.
That's true. Wow. How long did you stay there?
I stayed for 22 years.
My goodness. Okay.
I was trying to leave a couple of times, but he talked me out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided, what the heck? I enjoy my, just like you, I enjoy my work.
Mm-hmm.
I was appreciated by everybody
mm-hmm.
in the company. And I was having a good time of my life. I don't mind working.
Right.
I love to be given opportunity to challenge me. And they did.
Wow.
After 22 years, I had some health issues. I had a high blood pressure and so on and so forth. My doctor told me, let's find some, and I travel a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I travel almost like 40% of the time.
Wow.
So my doctor told me that I should look for something that, less stressful. I decided, hey, I don't need the money anymore. So I decided to retire and start my teaching career. I taught at the university. I taught finance, accounting, mm-hmm. and management. So I taught for about 12 years.
Wow.
And a year before the pandemic, I decided to finish up my memoir.
Mm-hmm.
So I stopped teaching and working to finish my book. Then came the pandemic. So I have nothing, nowhere to go. I stay home and finish it in no time.
Right.
And I got published and the book was listed on Amazon.
Wow. You have done more in one lifetime than probably three people.
Thank you very much. Again, it's the opportunity. I got a lot of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I see a lot of people didn't have the opportunity presented to them, or they didn't seize the opportunity.
When it was given
That's
to
right.
them, they didn't take it. Yes.
Exactly. You're right.
And I love that you retired and then you worked some more and then you retired and now you're working some more.
Yes. Uh-huh.
You just can't stop, can you?
No. No,
no.
A day without doing something
mm-hmm.
worthy kind of bother me.
Right.
So now I'm doing some voluntary and also serve on the board trustee of nonprofit organization.
Okay. Okay. What boards, what charities do you support? Or you can email me later because I want to promote. Every time someone comes on that has a charity, I love to promote the charity as well.
Well, pretty simple. I serve on the board trustee of Pacific University, a mm-hmm. private university in Forest Grove, Oregon.
Okay.
That gave me some. I serve on the finance committee, the audit committees, and the investment committee. Those are the area of my expertise.
Okay.
And also doing something good.
That's amazing. And the scholarship program that was in effect when you came here, is that still something that's in effect today?
I don't think so, because at the time, the U.S. was a big ally of South Vietnam. And at the time, South Vietnam was given scholarship. Now, it's the communist government.
Mm.
I don't think that unless there's some special arrangement between South Vietnam, between communist Vietnam and the United States.
Oh.
The situation is different now.
That's too bad because I feel like it could maybe open up conversations between the two countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
An exchange program of some sort.
Exactly. However, there's something that I know. A lot of people in the U.S. Congress
mm-hmm.
still feel bad about the communists violated the Paris Peace Agreement
mm-hmm.
and took over South Vietnam. So in order to secure the funding, I think the U.S. Congress may not be readily to provide assistance like they give to, say, South Korea or Thailand.
Right, right. That is a difficulty.
Yes.
It's too bad. It's too bad because it seems like a program that worked. I mean, I don't know specifically. You spoke a little bit about your childhood, but that was that opportunity to come to the U.S. and to be educated at a university. Was it something that you applied for and had to have good grades in school?
Definitely, yes.
Okay.
There was a lot of people, you know, the hope and dreams of a young person in South Vietnam at the time was able to go abroad for college education. The number one destination would be the U.S., followed by Australia, England, France.
Right.
I was so lucky that I prepared myself for the opportunity. I learned my English. I spent a lot of time listening to the BBC or the VOA broadcast in English. I also tried to get good grades. And so when I applied, I knew that I have a chance.
Right.
But at the time, there's a lot of corruption in the South Vietnamese government. Who knows? A major government official may push his son or daughter to get a scholarship.
Right.
So still, there was my luck that I got a scholarship.
Right. And you did it honestly.
Yes. Well, my family was very poor.
Right. And there's incidents of that here in America where wealthy parents will pay. You've seen probably in the news,
yeah,
and they
USC.
Go to, yeah, and they go, they get arrested and they go to jail because they try to buy their children's education when they should just earn it.
That's right. Well, you know, it happened everywhere. Money talks.
Yeah. So how many students would apply for the scholarship and how many would get to go?
I don't know the exact number of students who applied to the scholarship that I received, but only finally at only 30 was awarded scholarship.
30 from Vietnam, only from South Vietnam?
Yeah, for the entire country of South Vietnam.
Wow. So probably 100.
Maybe 1,000.
Right. Because that, like you said, that was the big dream to go abroad and get that.
It's a huge dream. Wow. It changed life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at you. You're what, 18 years old or so? 17, 18 years old?
Yeah.
And you go from Vietnam to Oregon or to California? Yeah, oh my gosh. What a shock, huh?
Well, I didn't think it was a shock. I embraced it.
Yeah.
I think this is a nice adventure. When I was in Oregon, went to Pacific University, in my second year, it was too easy.
Oh no.
I didn't have to work. I mean, I didn't study weekends.
Yeah.
And there's a party every night.
Uh-oh.
So yeah, because I think the dormitory, there's lots of party. And a fraternity house, that's always party. So I decided I come here to get a good education. So I decided I got to find some challenge. I transferred to UC Berkeley, where no amount of study was enough.
You're right. No more party time.
No more party. That's true. And I'm glad I did that.
Wow.
The education that I received at Berkeley was not only very quality, but very competitive. Nobody at Berkeley was sitting around watching TV and go to party.
Right.
Everybody tried to get a degree. And not only that, they want to get some honor with that degree.
Exactly. You don't want to just graduate or barely graduate.
That's right.
You want that prestige or the honor that comes with it.
Right.
Absolutely. So you probably embraced that lifestyle of doing the best you can.
That's
and
right.
Being
well, the it's how I was raised.
Yep.
Don't take the easy way out.
Yep.
My dad said that when you do something, do it well.
Oh.
So, you know, that's
very
how I was.
Very smart guy.
Yes.
Your dad.
Yes.
That's amazing. So what's next on your plate now that you can't go anywhere? You're going to write another book?
Well, I'm thinking, as I wrote in my introduction, I apologize to a lot of people who have helped me, but I could not mention them in my book. I wrote that there isn't enough room or space for everyone and every detail. So I wrote that if this book is well received and deserve a sequel, then I would include many of my benefactor and teachable story.
That would be a great book, your college years and the people that you met along the way and the people that helped you along the way.
That's
and
right.
the little personal stories.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that would be a great idea. And this book is well received. And if it wasn't, I would be surprised because it's smooth. It's, I don't want to say easy to read, but it's easy to comprehend. You can follow the story very well and it's engaging. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were so many times I got choked up reading it because I was just like the time when you and your brother finally got on the bus only to hear that the airport had been bombed.
Exactly.
It's like so many times you were so close, you know?
Exactly. It broke my heart.
Mm-hmm.
After when I was on the bus, I said, this is our way out.
And you're so excited. Yeah.
Turned to Vietnam because it was my obligation. I got to return. Mm-hmm. And the driver said the airport is under rocket attack. He turned the bus around. To this day, I still wonder what happened to him.
Mm-hmm. The bus driver.
The bus driver.
Wow.
He's a Caucasian. So when he returned the bus, and parked pretty close to the U.S. Embassy. I don't know what happened to him.
Wow.
I hope that he has some kind of a identification from a neutral embassy.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Swiss embassy.
Right.
Or the French embassy. That's fine too.
Right.
I hope he get out fine. Well, I owe him a debt of gratitude because he stayed and drove the U.S. government bus to take the U.S. government employees to the airport to be evacuated by air.
With no guarantee that he was actually going to get on the plane.
Exactly, yeah. Well, my guess is once you get there, and he and the refugee would be allowed to board the airplane who flew us to Clark Air Base in the Philippines, but it didn't happen. The airport was under rocket attack. He was ordered to turn back.
Wow. See, it's these little stories. These are the little stories, you know? Well, we'll just have to pray that he got out and, you know, he lived a wonderful life afterwards because of the good that he did. I mean, you are rewarded for the good that you do, I think. So we shall hope so.
I so hope so.
Oh, it's been so wonderful talking to you.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity. I hope that the purpose of my writing the book will get to the younger generation. I think that through my story, they understand what a land of opportunity this country provides them.
Absolutely.
And that they would learn that you got to strive hard and try to conquer every difficulty. Never give up.
Absolutely. I mean, every single roadblock that was thrown into your way, the bus, you know, the boat that left with your sister, every option that it seemed like you were getting out and something happened to stop it, but you never stopped trying. You never gave up.
You know, American movie was very good. I don't know if you watch Cool Hand Luke.
Cool Hand Luke, a long time ago, yeah.
Yes, a long time ago when I went to college here. And also Babylon.
Which one? Pavlon?
Papillon.
Oh, Papillon. Okay.
Yeah. Played by Steve McQueen. In a French prison, French Guyana. Those two guys never give up. And they always try despite the imminent death.
Absolutely.
I watched those two movies and I said, if they try it, I try.
So you were inspired by Cool Hand Luke, huh?
Yes.
That's amazing. Oh, no. I love it.
It's my favorite movie. You know, he was working as a chain gang prison, and he tried to escape every time.
Mm-hmm.
I felt, you know, watching the movie, I felt so bad for him.
Little did you know that you would be Cool Hand Luke in a few years.
Yeah, that's right. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I just love that you never gave up, ever. You did not take no for an answer. You did not lay down and cry that, you know, oh, well, I guess that was the last chance. You were boarded by different pirates. They stole your jeans, your bus, everything that could happen happened to you, and yet you prevailed. And you not only prevailed, but you succeeded, and you became this successful American businessman, would you say, and author and teacher. And you're influencing so many people with your words. And I'm just very honored to have been able to speak to you.
I'm honored to have an opportunity. Thank you for giving me that opportunity.
Oh,
I
it's
hope
my pleasure.
I m have made some contribution to your show.
Absolutely, you have.
Again, and you have a good rest of the weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning in to my conversation with Mr. Tim Tran. Please head on over to timtranamericandreamer.com. You can pick up his book or you can order it on Amazon as well. He truly deserves all this support. He's an amazing human being that continues to do good well into his twilight years, as they say. Head on over to beunique.org. Like, follow, and support my beautiful partners over there. You can find me on social media. I am Pup Duffy on Twitter and TikTok and the Instagram. You can also follow the show on Facebook, Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. As always, take care of each other, love each other, watch each other's back, and I'll see you next time.